All right, I'm going to be talking about our work looking at the effects of a parent training intervention on improving service access and employment in post-secondary education for transition-aged youth with ASD. So this is not going to be a surprise probably to almost anybody in this room, but the adult disability service system in the U.S. has a lot of problems. One is that, surprise, surprise, right? One is that it's really severely underfunded. And so what this means is that wait lists can be very, very long, and it can be very difficult to get services that people need just by the mere fact that the services aren't available. In addition to the adult service system being underfunded, many of the services are administered by different agencies that don't really talk to each other. So there's really not a lot of coordination between agencies and service providers, meaning that parents have to go to one agency for the service, another agency for another. And even though there's no coordination between agencies and services, the services depend on each other. So these services tend to be interrelated oftentimes with gateway services and eligibility criteria that depend on each other in terms of level of benefits as well. So this makes for an adult service system that even if the services are available, it's just incredibly complicated and difficult to maneuver. And at least in part because of difficulty accessing services, we've got a pretty substantial body of research now that shows that youth with ASD experience a number of risks during the transition to adulthood. So there are studies that suggest that these youth have difficulties finding appropriate vocational activities, or sometimes vocational activities at all, appropriate or not. We see slowing or worsening of behavioral development after high school exit. A number of studies now have shown high rates, and sometimes very high rates, of mood and anxiety problems. We're finding increasing isolation from structured and organized social activities after high school exit, and also slowing of improvement in the mother-child relationship, and this leads to parents feeling like it's harder to parent their son or daughter with autism after high school because of all of these additional challenges. So there really is an urgent need to develop interventions to improve service access and transition outcomes for these families. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our attempt to enter this space. So our program is called the Volunteer Advocacy Project Transition, or the VAPT. And this is a parent training to improve transition outcomes for youth with ASD by really trying to teach parents about the adult disability service system and supports with a real focus on how they go together, how they interrelate, and also the most effective ways to access services. What I don't have on the slide here is we also think a lot about teaching parents to think about coming from a person-centered thinking perspective and person-centered planning, so really trying to understand the hopes and the dreams of their son or daughter and use that to guide, you know, what they attend to in our presentations on services and what they tune out. It's based on an existing program that's been going on at Vanderbilt for a number of years now called the Volunteer Advocacy Project, or VAP. This trains advocates who work with school-age children on special education law. So we took that same model that they've been using for a number of years, and instead of being about services and legislation within the schools, it's focused more on the adult service system and advocating that system of care. Just as a side note, when we wrote our grant proposal for this, we kind of talked about how we were going to tweak the program to make it applicable for adult services, and that was incredibly naive. It took us months and months and months to try to figure out how to take this complicated service system and try to put it into some sort of digestible way for families. It's a 12-week program. The way that it's set up now, each week is 2.5 hours. And what we do is for each week for the topic at hand, we bring in an expert guest lecture from the community who's a real expert in how to get things done in that area. So, for example, if we're talking about SSI, Supplemental Security Income, we would have somebody come in either from SSI office or from our advocacy groups in town that can really walk parents through how do you fill out an SSI application. This is what they're saying in this question, but here's actually what you need to put down. It's like this nuts and bolts practical information that can be difficult for families, but really matters a lot. Each week is a combination of lecture, activities, and question and answer, again, with a focus not only on kind of what the service is and the benefits, but also kind of the really practical information about how to access it. I'm going to talk about three aspects of our approach on this slide here. So the first is the blue circle in the middle. We really focus in on parents as advocates, at least in the program as it stands now. And the reason for that is when we were thinking about entering the kind of adult intervention sphere, one thing that we were thinking about is how can we aid families in supporting their sons and daughters? And as we talked to families in our studies, by far the biggest stressor that was coming up as we talked to them was navigating the adult service system. Now, instead of kind of focusing in on one particular aspect of adult outcome, our approach is, again, to kind of be comprehensive and talk about all the different aspects of adult services. So we have a week on housing, we have a week on, or 2 weeks actually, on financial support, post-secondary education, employment, 2 weeks on that, special needs trust, and then one specific session on non-adversarial advocacy, but then advocacy tips and techniques sprinkled throughout the entire program. And then the other aspect that at least we're trying to do in our program is to develop a program that's broadly applicable to youth across the autism spectrum. And, of course, we know that that is a very, very wide spectrum. And, you know, there are going to be some sessions that are clearly going to be more relevant to some youth than to others. But as a whole, we are trying to develop a program that can be really broadly applicable. Okay, so in today's talk, I'm going to talk a little bit about our work looking at whether participating in the VAPT program leads to improvements in parents' ability to advocate for their son or daughter, which is outcomes of knowledge, advocacy skills, and comfort and empowerment. These are our proximal outcomes. I actually presented some preliminary data on this at INFAR last year, but I think I'm going to go through it really quickly because I think it's important to understanding our distal outcomes, and also because the panel was on Saturday afternoon, so I'm assuming that probably most of you didn't get a chance to see it. And then I'm going to spend the rest of the time talking about then, does participating in the VAPT actually lead to improved service access in post-secondary educational and vocational outcomes? Okay, so for our study design, we did a pilot randomized controlled trial. We had 45 parents of transition-age youth with ASD. These were all youth who were within 2 years of high school exit. Interestingly, we started out recruiting only youth whose parents were, who were going to leave high school in the next 2 years, and when we were pre-piloting our work, we kind of got this inclination that it was really hard for families to anticipate what services their son or daughter was going to need. So kind of at the last second, we recruited in some families whose son or daughter had already left high school to try to get some idea about whether this information is going to be more helpful after families have a chance to kind of see their son or daughter out of high school and in the adult world and have a better feel for their areas of challenge as well as the areas where they may not need support. So that can be really hard to anticipate. So we randomized families, we collected our pretest information before, and then we randomized families to either the intervention group, who got the program right away, or our waitlist control group. We collected a post-test after the 12-week program from both groups, and these were our proximal outcomes. Then we collected data 6 months after the intervention group completed the program. That's what I'll be talking about today in question two. We also have just finished collecting data 12 months after, and then our waitlist control group is taking the VAPT right now. So we recruited 45 initially. We were able to retain 41 of those at post-test. So this is question one. And then we kept 38 of those through the six-month follow-up. This is question two. And these are the demographics for the 38 at the six-month follow-up. So 16% had exited high school before the start of the study. Again, this was sort of a last-minute addition to recruit families whose son or daughter had already left high school. But 42% had left high school by our six-month follow-up. Mostly male, and about a third of the youth had a co-occurring intellectual disability. Most of the parents who participated in our research were moms, were females. And I should just say, too, we allowed both the moms and the dads to come to the program, but we designated one person as the primary research respondent here. And in this case, it was almost always moms. Mostly married, mostly European-American, and with a reasonably high median income, so not particularly diverse. Which is a real problem, right? That's a function of, I think, who we tend to see in our studies often, but also a function of an intervention that requires families to come into a research center for 12 weeks. We'll be thinking about how to adapt that in the future. Okay, so for measures, for our post-test, I'm just going to talk briefly about these. We developed a measure that's really just kind of a multiple-choice test about adult services, knowledge about that. We worked really hard on this to try to get a measure that wasn't so easy that everybody, you know, passed it lovely, and then wasn't so hard that nobody got any questions right and kind of got right in the middle there. We had a measure on advocacy skills and comfort that Megan Burke from the University of Illinois developed. She's used in a number of studies. And then we looked at family empowerment using the family empowerment scale. This has been pretty widely used with families of children who are getting mental health services. We found it to be a really nice comprehensive scale. It measures empowerment on three different dimensions, the family, the service system, and the larger community and political environment. At our six-month follow-up, we collected data on services using questions from the National Longitudinal Transition Study 2, or NLTS 2. And we basically gave parents a list of 22 services and said, are you getting this service? We did this at pretest and at the six-month follow-up. And you can see just some examples of the 22 services are mental health services, speech-language services, vocational training, et cetera. At our six-month follow-up, we also used questions from the NLTS2 to ask families what barriers they were experiencing to accessing services. So there was a list of 12 barriers, and parents could endorse whichever ones they were currently an issue for them. So these were cost of services, for example, my son or daughter's not eligible, lack of information about services. And finally, for the subsample, that 40% whose son or daughter was out of high school, we looked to see what he or she was doing with their day. Encoded that as whether or not they were currently enrolled in a post-secondary education program or employed in the community. Let's see how I'm doing here. Me? Okay. So I'm going to go through this quickly in the interest of time, but we did sort of our standard parametric analyses for question one, and then because we were looking at counts of services and things of that sort for question two, we did non-parametric statistics. Okay, into the data. So question one, does the VAPT and participating in that impact our proximal outcomes of parent advocacy ability? And what we found was that relative to the control group families, the parents who took the VAPT knew more about adult services at the end of the program. They felt more skilled and comfortable advocating on behalf of their son or daughter, and they felt more empowered. So this is promising because these were the exact things that we were trying to target. So if we weren't seeing changes, that would be a big problem. And you can see that the effect sizes are large. So the smallest one here is 0.77 all the way up to 1.1. But of course, what we're really interested in is, does participating in the VAPT actually lead to differences in service access and differences in employment and post-secondary education? And our preliminary evidence from this small pilot study seems to suggest that this could be the case. So this is looking at the number of services that families are receiving at pretest and at six-month follow-up for our intervention and control group. And what we find is that families are receiving a difference in medians of 1.5 more services from our intervention group at the six-month follow-up, and that is statistically significant, just barely, but it is. And families in our control group are not receiving significantly more services at the six-month follow-up. We looked at barriers to service access, and there was no statistically significant differences there, but families in our control group were reporting 5 out of the 12 barriers to service access, which I think is a lot. And that was down to a median of 3.5 in our intervention group. And finally, we looked to see whether we could see differences in participation in community employment or post-secondary education. And again, we really need to take this with a grain of salt because this is an itty-bitty sample. We had 6 people in our intervention group who were out of high school, 10 in our control group who were out of high school. But what we found was that for those youth whose families had taken the VAPT, all of them were either employed in the community or enrolled in PSE, in post-secondary education, 6 months out, compared to 50% in our control group. Finally, I'll briefly look at this. We wanted to try to begin to get a little bit of a feel for if we see differences in effects of the VAPT on service access, why might that be the case? Is it just getting families' knowledge about adult services? And if that's the case, we can do that in a lot of different ways. Families don't have to come to Vanderbilt for a group session if it's just getting families' information online. But if it's something more than that, that's really helpful to know, right? So we looked at our intervention and control group and just ran some correlations to see if we could see any relationships between post-test scores on our primary outcomes, so knowledge, advocacy skills, and comfort and empowerment, and changes in services from pretest to 6 months. And what we found was that those families in our intervention group who had higher empowerment scores at post-test were the ones who saw the greatest gains in service access, and only for the intervention group, not for the control group. And it's not statistically significant, but the correlation is 0.44, so, you know, it's a big correlation in an itty-bitty sample. So I think this provides some really nice preliminary evidence that actually taking this program, the VAPT, might lead to improved service access and improved post-school outcomes for individuals with ASD. It's suggesting that the empowerment that parents are gaining from being in the program might be more important than the specific knowledge itself, although I would argue probably the specific knowledge is part of the empowerment. But I think this also argues maybe to try to, at least for this next pass, to keep the VAPT in a group setting where families can meet other families and problem solve together and things of that sort. We've been thinking a lot about what's the best way to deliver, balancing convenience to families with what we think is going to be the most effective. Clearly, we need larger samples for a lot of different reasons. One, to determine whether the intervention actually is effective, but also to really start to get a feel for whether the effects of the program depend on the characteristics of the son or daughter. So I alluded to this earlier, but does this program work better while the son or daughter is still in high school and families have this information to plan? Or does it seem to work better once the son or daughter is out of high school? Families can see where the specific areas of challenge are and really zone in there. Does it seem to work better for families of people with ASD who have more significant cognitive impairments or fewer? We don't really know with our small sample. We have some hints, but I think this is a really important direction for future research here. And then we need to follow families longer. 6 months after intervention may not be enough time for families to really kind of procure and get adult services in place, especially if they're on a waiting list. And that's it. I think I went over... Not bad. So I want to acknowledge my collaborators at Vanderbilt. Bob Hodapp, Carol Rabideau, Megan Burke, and Sydney Waits-Kudla have been really key in helping us develop this program. The students and RAs who worked. We had a really involved advisory committee that vocal and involved and helpful, who really helped us shape the program and understand how to deliver it. And that was service providers, families of people with ASD, self-advocates, and advocates in the community, and their participation was really invaluable to the process. Our participating families and our funding sources, particularly National Institutes of Mental Health. Thank you very much.